Hey everybody, Simon Rentner here. Welcome to the Checkout Podcast. Before we get to the show, I just wanted to shout out some cool stuff on our website, wbgo.org. We are showcasing drummers right now. Our latest Take 5 brings you brand new music from Jonathan Barber, the debut recording, the highly anticipated recording of Justin Brown, that's Thundercat's drummer. Also, percussionist Susie Ibarra has new music. And our very own WBGO's Rhonda Hamilton wrote an article about drummer Chris Beck and his album, The Journey, which you can hear in its entirety on Radar right now at WBGO.org. And now we bring you one of my favorite interviews that we've ever done on this show. In 2015, The Checkout had the rare opportunity to speak with Stephen Ellison. He's also known as Flying Lotus, about his only jazz recording, at least according to him, called You're Dead. In this archival podcast, the electronic music composer, filmmaker, and groundbreaking rabble-rouser, if you saw his film Cuso, here he delves deep into his jazz roots and talks about how being the grandnephew of Alice Coltrane influenced his brilliant sound. Ellison spoke candidly to us from his home in Los Angeles. It was during the same time we went out there to record Kamasi Washington and his debut as a band leader, The Epic. We documented that with much fanfare on Jazz Night in America. In this interview, Ellison reveals that some of the ideas heard on The Epic are also found on You're Dead. He shares what he considers to be his most technical composition he's ever made. Flying Lotus appears at the Festival of Disruption, curated by David Lynch at Brooklyn Steel, May 19th and 20th. We're talking with Stephen Ellison, aka Flying Lotus. We're talking about Flying Lotus's recording You're Dead from Warp. Just listening to individual tracks, my mind starts spinning how these even tunes were constructed. For instance, like Turkey Dog Coma, like yeah. The form. All of the forms of the songs are super interesting. You never hear songs like that. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, I was listening to a lot of, fusion and a lot of prog and stuff, and it just made me want to break my music open, and try to I didn't want to predict anything. I didn't want anyone to be able to predict where things were going. I wanted it to feel like you were on some mad ride. All these little nerdy details that went into it that makes me laugh. It makes me.
Please tell me. Tell me a nerdy detail, man.
Details, just like the first one you called out, the Turkey Dog Coma. That was probably the most technical song I've ever been a part of. That one, and it all started out as just kind of doing all these little sections in one sitting, and then. Embellishing upon these ideas over months and months, But, it was just so much fun to just jump ahead. Like every time I thought, all right, this is a good loop or this is a good place to settle. No, just keep, break that, keep going, and I don't know, it's just fun. That's what keeps me going, man. If I kept doing the same stuff and not challenging myself, exploring, I wouldn't have fun with it. ¶¶
I guess the kind of irony is, like, you know, jazz is made in real time or spontaneously, yeah. You know, and it's supposed to be unpredictable. But if you probably look at the kind of hours and labor that you put into your dead, it probably far surpassed any of your other records.
Just absolutely, yeah. But there was that same spirit of the spontaneity, you know, like when recording people and, you know, I wouldn't play things too long to people. It was just like, do things. Are we going to do these four bars here a couple times? You get it? All right, now that's it. And then we record it, stop it. Oh, let me do another. No. That's it. That was it right there. You know, it was just, and it, every time we try to perfect anything, it just sounded horrible. So it was just like, let's keep it raw, keep it real, and just keep it feeling of that moment, you know. That's a hard thing to do with recording. Is there a track on there that you're particularly proud of that statement? Because I think that all of them are gems in a way, and like, you know, you have Herbie Hancock, which should be noted. We're a jazz station. Yeah.
We got to talk about Herbie at least a little bit.
Yeah.
Herbie Hancock it makes an appearance on, what, Tesla, and also Moment of Hesitation?
Yeah. Yeah, he's on both of those, yeah. That was really cool, and those were done early in the early days of the recordings, and it was really good that I did those with him first, because it just gave me the confidence to pursue the ideas once he told me that he was so into it, you know, he was getting it. He was like, oh yeah, it's gonna be like yes, okay, you got it, all right, I'm keep going, you know. It was a good support. You know, having my grandpa tell me that it was all good, you know.
And as one of the first musicians to mess with electronics in M1 Dishi, right, in the 70s, that was almost like a statement of yours saying, yeah, this is a jazz record. I'm having Herbie on my record.
Yeah.
Because you're messy. You're Tesla. You're messing with
modern
technology, right?
Yeah, man. He's so hip. He's always like in the know of anything new, technologically, and just like talking to me about space and sending music to different planets and whatever. I'm like, okay. You're that guy.
You mess with vocals and sort of this choral kind of thing on your recording, You're Dead. And like, I hear a lot of what Kamasi was experimenting with. Kamasi Washington and his epic ensemble. You know, there's sort of like a connection to what he's doing and what you're doing.
Absolutely. And, you know, to be fair, there was like... I remember when they did all the kind of famous studio sessions for this record, where, you know, all those guys made albums in like 2 months, you know. I remember being there and getting really inspired by it, and that was like right around when I started working on You're Dead. So, you know, he definitely inspired me to take it in the direction I did too.
Well, there's definitely a sort of lab mentality to your recording as
yeah.
well, and his yeah. recording.
Yeah.
That's also, is that lab mentality also LA? LA lab thing?
Maybe. You know, and I probably. I don't know. I only work
Because there's something kind of selfless about locking yourself into a studio and going in with a bunch of musicians, you know, and sort of like a timeshare.
Yeah.
And just saying, we don't know what the F we're going to make here.
Yeah.
But we're doing it, and we're working something out.
Yeah. But it also, there's also a level of trust that goes into that. You know, like these guys, they've all been working together since they were teenagers. So it's like, it's kind of just like an extension of their friendship in a way. You know, it's like they've already been through so much, and it's like, okay, let's talk about it. You know, let's put it all down right now.
Well, I have to also ask you about being just the grandnephew of Alice Coltrane and the first cousin of Ravi Coltrane. We've recorded Ravi Coltrane many times at the Village Vanguard and featured his music.
Yeah.
And so I guess when you were attending the John Coltrane Festival when you were a kid and you were listening to all this jazz, probably being shoved down your throat.
I loved it. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. And actually, Thundercat, he was telling me that I might have met him in Kumasi there a couple times, because they played at those festivals, the John Coltrane festivals, like when they were younger. So it's even crazier, man. It's like, that was the thing. I'm like, wow, for real?
Yeah. Was there one or two Alice Coltrane or John Coltrane, whatever, train-oriented pieces of music that resonated with you, that you always came back to?
Yeah, I really like, it's not necessarily there, song, but it's they always play Going Home, which is, you know, a spiritual song, and it just resonates with me so much, you know, like they would play that song. Both John Coltrane played it, Alice played it, you know, and I listen to it all the time now. Just it's such a, you know, it's just about passing, you know. So when my aunt left, I was like, that was the song. And it made, like, it helped me to get through, you know, and helped me to cope. And so that was one for sure that's kind of, no one would really speak of that one. But that was, it's deep for me.
And that was at a time when you were studying film and you weren't even know you knew you were going to be a musician, right?
Man, you did your homework, didn't you? Yeah, exactly. What am I even going to tell you? You know everything already.
Not my listeners, man. You got to embellish. You got to fill in the gaps.
Yeah, man. I always wanted to make stuff, but I never thought anything would happen, you know? So it was... All this is kind of a surprise, you know. Some people have saw it, you know. They're like, "Oh yeah, I'm totally gonna be on stage doing all this stuff in my life." I never would have guessed it. Never. Maybe when I was in college, but before that.
It's my duty in life, as somebody that works for the number one jazz station, to try and, you know, open people's mind to music.
Man, well, thank you for fighting that fight.
The real question, though, because I've also talked to a lot of people about Aphex Twin or, you know, about electronic music in general, and how they're folk artists, you know, essentially what jazz artists were back in the day when they were working stuff out in the lab. You are in the lab playing with all these devices and interfaces creating music. And I always cite back to, you know, something that you can watch. I mean, there's so many videos that you can watch of Flying Lotus online. I encourage to take a whole day off and watch them all. There's this one clip on YouTube. It's Flying Lotus live at the Low End Theory from 2007, October, from the unreleased Beat Invitation number 5.
The drumming stuff, the finger drumming stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. We'll be right back. And to me, it's like, okay, here's a moment where I can say, here's Flying Lotus being a jazz musician.
Yeah. That was fun. That was fun. I had to do more of that kind of stuff. I haven't done that in a while.
Yeah, give it up for Flying Lotus, y'all.
And so would you equate it to that? Like, would you equate like what that performance to you being a jazz musician?
You know, I think it's more so a mentality than anything. Not necessarily a sound to me. In my mind, it's more so a mentality. You know, I like the idea of anything can go wrong if I'm not on my toes, you know, if I'm not doing my thing right. It can all fall apart. I love that. I think that's a jazz thing. I think it's like any night you have to just, you put it all on the line, you know. I don't know where I'm going. I have a lot of tools to mess with and things to play around with, but you don't know. I don't know. I don't want to know. I want the danger in there, you know, and I like that. And that to me is where I feel like I have my jazz mentality is at, you know, in terms of live performance and whatever.
And what about playing the drum parts in real time?
Yeah, that's fun too, you know. That's fun. I should get back into that, man. You're inspiring me right now.
Well, it is inspiring because I can tell, like, for instance, on the Never Catch Me, you play those drum hits. That's a performance of the drum hits because a machine aren't hitting those with those inflections. And maybe it's because I listen to a lot of jazz that I would be able to identify that.
See, that's tight, man. Yeah, at least you know, man. It's funny, though, because, like, everyone asks me, like, they're like, you don't quantize? Like, no. No, I mean, sometimes to get that effect, you know, but it's not.
It's different.
I don't get it, man. I don't get, like, why it's so sci-fi to people to actually just record it in. You know, it's like,
it makes electronic music human.
Feel like it's alive and it has dynamics and velocities and stuff and not just robot music, yeah.
Well, I understand Dunn was made a pretty nice offer to you to come to Blue Note Records and to actually make a jazz record.
Was it a nice offer? I don't remember. Nah, I love Don, man. He was cool, man. He was cool. I think it would have been a little weird. And I didn't, like I said, it's just real particular about how things come out, how they're released, and who they're released with.
No, I know. But I was actually, quite frankly, just really impressed that he did that.
Me too. I was really flattered. I was really flattered. And he's a really nice guy too.
It seems like everything you touch here is gold. And I'm wondering, why aren't you recording for your own label? That was a question that I had.
Well, you know, I feel like I don't want to have all my eggs in one basket. I'm that kind of person, you know. And I don't want to have to work my own stuff. It's nice to have another label do that for you. And I've already established good relations with them. And, you know, I feel like what I do at Warp is its own legacy. You know, what I do at Brainfeeder is its own thing, too. You know, so I don't know. Maybe I will do something in the future.
So when are you going to make your next jazz record?
I'm not. I'm done, man. That's it.
What do you mean?
That was it. I did it. I feel like with Cosmo Grandma, I was kind of like hinting at it. And with Your Dead, I wanted to kind of go in and then just kind of say that. I don't know. I can't say I'll never do anything again, you know, but that was kind of the initial thrust of making that record was I wanted to do a jazz record that felt like you know, all these kind of short breaks, but they all gelled together. And then the idea evolved some. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen next, man.
Were you disappointed in how the sort of jazz industry received the recording?
No, not at all. Not at all. I wasn't disappointed in anything. I think it all went down really well. Only thing I just wish I'd have done, the only thought that goes with it is it could have been a double album with Thundercat. We were planning on that. There was a moment where we planned on doing that, and you know, he does a side, I do a side, and it would be that. Because we were both, it was kind of both of our idea, You're Dead. So I thought it would be kind of cool if we both teamed up like that and did this double album. But you know, maybe we'll do something like that in the future. But yeah, that would have been fun.
Well, I'm sure you probably have another terabyte of material that came from that album. Because when
there's,
I listened...
Stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff still. And I want to put it forward, but at the same time, I already want to do other things. I got new ideas I want to pursue.
One of the pieces on Your Dead, Terminus. Cronus, the Terminator, right?
Yeah.
In which you said that particular track, which is also a magnificent music video, which you should absolutely see, is pointing into the future of Flying Lotus, aesthetically, thematically.
Yeah. The next thing I want to do, like I said, I feel like I did the jazz thing this last time, so I wanted to do something a little bit more. I wanted to say it yet. I don't want to say it. You already hold me to stuff I said. I don't know.
It's okay.
Things will change. But, yeah, I just want to tell a different story that I haven't yet.
Well, I'm glad that you at least will admit that Your Dead is your jazz record.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people didn't think that.
That's cool.
And continue to this day don't think that.
That's cool, man. I feel like it was done in that spirit. I think it was made in the jazz spirit. I felt like the approach was jazz, from my understanding. What you hear might not be what you're familiar with when it comes to jazz, but I felt like that was my statement.
Well, thank you for talking with me for the checkout. I've been wanting to do this interview for a very long time, so.
I'm glad we did it. Thank you.
Flying Lotus is performing a DJ set at the Festival of Disruption, curated by David Lynch at Brooklyn Steel, May 19th and 20th this weekend. If you like the show, please share it with your friends, spread it far and wide, and follow us on social media. Our social media handles, I'm at Simon Rentner, at Checkout Jazz, at WBGO. We also have a Facebook page and on Instagram, too. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rettner. Thanks for checking us out.